Welcome to the Business of Sport, brought to you by Sports Finder. Every week, our CEO, Ahmad El-Hawly, and his co-host, Rob Yowell, founder of Gemini Sport, come together to break down the hottest topics in the world of the business of sport.
Welcome, everyone, to our weekly segment on the business of sport. Myself, Ahmad El-Hawly, your host, and my co-host, Mr. Rob Yowell. We're back again, another week, another action-packed week in the world of sport. But this week, we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to look at a sporting behemoth in today's world and go through their journey of growth and expansion and how they've come up over the last 20 or so years. And that company, the organization that we're going to be talking about today is the UFC. I mean, the UFC, for many people in the world, is MMA. Some people don't even know that it's MMA. They think it's UFC. They refer to it as UFC. That's how big this brand has become. Before I get into all the nitty-gritties, I think I want to welcome my co-host, Mr. Rob. See how he is. His thoughts on the UFC, his dealings with the UFC, his past with the UFC. Mr. Rob. How's things, my man?
I think things are good. Things are good. And, UFC is the 800-pound gorilla in the world of combative sports these days. And, certainly we've got you could build several shows around the empire that Dana White has built, and the Fertitta brothers and now Endeavor and all of the brands and partners and the fighters and the personalities that have evolved out of this, this sport, this organization, and excited to kind of dive into it a little bit today with you on tonight's show.
Absolutely. So let's get back to the origins. I mean, when they first bought this company, the Fertitta brothers and Dana White, the thing was in shambles. They were almost bankrupt. So I think they paid $2 million for it at the time. And all they received was literally the name UFC, because the previous owner had sold all its rights and naming rights and anything that you can possibly sell. So they really, they had to buy back trademarks, and they had to buy back their domain, and it was an absolute shit show. These guys had to literally not start at the bottom; they had to dig underground and get going. So you can just imagine, 20 years later, they're like a $12 billion company in today's world. The success that they have garnered over the years is phenomenal, and to come from a position where every jurisdiction, every state is pretty much knocking you back, and you had to lobby and campaign just to make it legal in any state in America, I think, other than Nevada at the time. I mean, everything stacked against you. And I mean, as you know from your, I'm sure you've come across them and you've seen them over the years, that they're a very well oiled machine now, and brands are throwing money at them, and brands are announcing themselves to the world through them, because they have a very engaged audience. They have people that live, die, and swear by their product. And every single fight night, they're breaking pay-per-view records, they're breaking gate records, they're breaking attendance records, sponsorship records. They have a $1 billion deal with ESPN, and Fox was struggling to put them on, and they started on Spike TV, and just the journey has been phenomenal. Over to you.
Well, as you alluded to, they bought a beater, it had a good engine. It needed to be cleaned up. They had to get some new tires on it. They had to do a paint job, but at the end of the day, a lot of things are about timing, and the timing of this combative sport MMA was starting to grow, because the prevalent combative sport of boxing was in its decline. Mike Tyson was gone, right? You didn't have this uber personality leading the heavyweight division in boxing. You weren't seeing some of the fights that you would like to see. And look, the UFC in its early days, the reason it was outlawed in certain states is that it was no holds barred. I mean, it was elbows and knees. It was like a street fight in the ring, as opposed to what you see today is very structured, very rules driven, very professional. Still a combative, violent sport, but in the eyes of the lawmakers and the those that grant licenses for these events, it had cleaned itself up and had organized itself into a respectable sport. Now, with that, came, some, the ability to start landing a few sponsors, because it was no longer this, grotesque, eye gouging and damn near gladiator to the death type of, event that really, brands and sponsors were like, I can't touch that. I really can't. To what we see now, I've had several friends that worked for this organization, that landed that first big Bud Light deal, that were there when they got their first, the first TV deal, were there when, Metro PCS and, then ultimately the Reebok deal gets signed, the creation of Ultimate Fighter that kind of was that reality show that started to bring in people, to some of the personalities that we saw, Forrest Griffin and those guys, that kind of came out of that show. We got a chance to kind of know the fighters a little bit. And at the end of the day, what has made this, organization so popular globally, and to your point, made it attractive to brands and sponsors and fans, is the personalities that this fight organization, the Ultimate Fight, Fighting Championships created. And, you give Dana White a lot of credit. The guy's a hell of a marketer, but as good of a marketer as he is, he identified talent. He identified, the types of talent that people wanted to see, created the matchups that fans wanted to see that boxing wasn't giving us, honestly.
Yeah.
We talk a little bit about some of the fights we wish we saw when fighters were in their prime. I grew up being able to watch, Hagler and Hearns and Duran and, all them fight each other. They fought each other three times. You couldn't get Pacquiao and Mayweather to fight each other in their primes because they didn't want to lose. Mental fight as it would have been, but Conor McGregor would fight anybody anywhere anytime, John Bones Jones. Again, you had this. You had personalities. Global personalities. So, you've got Russian fighters, you've got Irish champions, you've got Brazilians, you've got, US fighters. You had, Ronda Rousey, all of a sudden opened this up to women and going, oh, hello. There's some bad ladies in this sport too. And she would, and then you start, you started to see them popping up like you did with, WWE, athletes, The Rock and John Cena and et cetera, who found their way into movies.
all of a sudden you see Ronda Rousey find her way into a movie. You know, and so what you saw was this evolution of a brand and a product. You know, it got sophisticated, they got smart, they made some right moves, but you know, their biggest competitor in their space was eating away at it, at itself, and that was boxing. And so they just kind of had this lane where they shot right to the top. And they did an excellent job of communicating with their fan base, giving their fan bases what they want, you know, putting together, you know, incredible fight cards, selling pay-per-view globally at $99 a fight. And, you know, these are, you know, what, maximum 5-round fights. Some of them, you know, some of the prelims are 3-round fights. But I mean, you know, it could be over in one punch.
But it was, yeah,
it's worth the, you know, the adrenaline and that goes into watching these events. It was worth it. I mean, it was, you know, kind of, you know, addictive in a way, right? You know, fan, you know, this was immediate gratification sports, and that was kind of one of those things that, you know, I think we talked about it, you know, a week or so ago, just, you know, how people are consuming sports and snippets and bites these days. This was the ultimate snippet and bite sport, because if you blinked and turned away to go get a beer, you missed the punch. You missed the roundhouse kick, you know, that you didn't see coming, and neither did the other guy in the ring. And lights out, you know, whereas in boxing, you know, pop, 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 you know, dance around, you know, you're running away. Where in the octagon, not many places to go. And oh, by the way, I can kick you. And I can hit you. And by the way, I'm not wearing gloves. I mean, I'm wearing, you know, 3-ounce gloves, 5-ounce gloves, as opposed to 10 and 12-ounce boxing gloves that are a little bit more cushion. I mean, you get hit with someone's, you know, blow in at USC, it could be lights out pretty quick. And there are some legendary fights. You know, Clay Guida, known for being in the middle of a lot of those because he just got a chin made of granite. You know, bleeds like a mother, but God, he just went into the UFC Hall of Fame. I mean, I can remember, you know, one of his fights where, you know, 5 rounds and he's bleeding, his hair's flying all over the place, and it's just rock 'em, sock 'em robots the entire time. Well, you know, just one of those, and you just go, that was 25 minutes and I'm out of breath, and I wasn't the guy in the ring. You know,
wow.
And that's the adrenaline and the passion that UFC started to deliver over and over and over again. And, you know, much like, you know, that's what, you know, ultimately, you know, brands, major brands get attracted because they look at the numbers, they look at viewership, they look at audience, you know, activation and audience, you know, how long an audience watches something. I mean, you know, you pay $99 for a UFC fight, you're committed, right? You know,
yeah.
you're going out and buying your Modelo beer, you're getting your proper 12, you know, whiskey on the table, you're going out and you know you're getting your P3, vitamin mix or whatever. I mean, you're looking at everybody that US sponsors UFC, and like it's in your house for that fight night. You kind of commit to the game.
You got 4 or 6 hours.
You know, it's a watch party. Let's go. But it's one of those things where every fight is, I mean, they're there to fight. They're not there to box, dance, skirt away. They're there to fight. They're there to, you know, get, you know, incentivized for, you know, knockout of the night and fight of the night. You know, they're, you know, all of those kinds of things. Obviously, the way the organization is structured, you're not dealing with, you know, promoters. I mean, UFC is the promoter.
It's a league.
You know, you work for the league, and the league says, "Hey, when I say you fight so and so, you fight so and so." You know, somebody's got to earn that fight, but you ain't ducking anybody because your manager says it's not good for you. I'm your manager. It's good for the UFC for you to fight somebody and fight somebody fight them in Brazil, fight them in, you know, St. Petersburg, fight them in Johannesburg. Hey, we fight all over the world. You know, we're global.
Correct.
You know, obviously, you know, we saw UFC be one of the first leagues to get us live sport back during COVID. You know, they went to Fight Island. You know, I mean, we're sitting there watching, you know, Jordan documentaries to get our sports fix in. And, you know, Dana White's like, hey, man, I got an island just off the just in Saudi Arabia that I can go put on some live events. Guess what? My fighters are working. My fighters are ready to work. And, you know, it gave us some live entertainment, man. And so, you know, again, they're an organization that took a risk. You know, give Fertitta Brothers and Dana White a lot of credit for, you know, rolling the dice and believing in what their vision was. They cleaned it up. They had a good plan. They executed on that plan. That attracted, the acquisition of Endeavor to come in and buy them, you know, because they, that's right. They proved the concept. You landed some major sponsorship deals. You got a broadcast deal. And then, you know, it's done nothing but continually rise. It's given us, you know, memorable fights. It's created some very memorable personalities, male and female, internationally. And today, you know, it's got a who's who lineup of sponsors, you know. I mean, it's and more importantly, what those sponsors are paying to be there. I mean, you could have we talked about pickleball and talked about some of these other sports that are starting to, you know, in esports in the early days when it started to kind of jump the shark a little bit and start getting away from not just the endemics of their sport. When UFC was starting, you know, you get Gracie's Gym and, you know, you get some of the, you know, the brands that are, you know, make the gloves or whatever, you know, it was very endemic. But when you started getting Bud Light, you know, when Budweiser starts coming in and you start getting, you know, the Modelos and you start getting, the other premium brands, you know, associating itself, you know, with your organization, you know, you've gone from being, an event to being a league, you know, to being a property and being something that, you know, the big boy brands are spending money on, you know, like the NFL, Premier League Soccer and you know, baseball and NCAA basketball, et cetera. You know, the things that kind of get measured against, you get compared against, and all of a sudden those brands are doing deals with your organization. You've kind of moved into the mainstream.
And let's hold the thought around brand partnerships. I want to get there and go and deep a bit. And dig a bit deeper into the whole brand partnership structure and what these brands are paying and so on. Let's go back a couple of steps. The marketing and promotion of fighters and the UFC brand. Now, just what I've realized over the years is that they can pick up any personality that's a half decent fighter. They put him through this marketing and PR machine of theirs. And all of a sudden, you've got a household name. So how are they doing that? That's the question, right? I mean, that's something that I'd love to break down even deeper and have a deeper understanding. Now, my lens, like, and my view on these things are they really adopted and adapted to social media in its early days. So they built this huge following. I mean, they got bigger followings than the NFL and all these other major leagues around the world. And they really made sure that anybody coming through, they built this narrative around them where people can relate to them. An average person coming through, people can relate to stories that are similar to theirs. And that's what they do so well. They do it remarkably well. The other side of it is obviously the whole TV and exposure and so on and so on. But it wasn't always like that. It wasn't always like that. From early days, they had to literally, just to end up on TV, they had to do their own their own production. They had, their own team, where pretty much the networks were just plugging them in. They were pretty much the last step of everything. So their marketing strategy, where these fighters come through this story that so many people can relate to, then they push them through this narrative where they become these elite fighters that now are fighting on the world stage. So the average person gets into this elite bracket where he's now fighting on the world stage for the UFC, and all of a sudden, you sitting at home think that you can do the same. and then all of a sudden, you're really engaged and you want to know more and more about that person. And then you start following them, you're watching more of their fights and so on and so on. And also the way they pick their fighters from different regions around the world, and they engage those regions, and they built a ton of PR in those countries around those fighters to engage crowds and followings and so on. Absolute genius. Yeah, so that's pretty much my take on things. I'd love to hear your thoughts on their whole strategy with their marketing and personal branding and PR.
Well, I mean, look, I agree that they've done a master class in developing their talent, internally, UFC gyms, UFC training, coming up through, creating programming like the Ultimate Fighter to kind of, get a free look, at talent. And it was a unique and great way to introduce your talent to your fan base. Like you said, you kind of got to know them, in a way. And these stars, they would build them up. They came up through the ranks, and you got undefeated challengers, and you started to get matchups that mattered. Every time you watched a preliminary bout, they'd always have a couple local heroes, but you also had they were very good at telling that story. Getting former UFC stars there to do some of the color commentary to talk, you talked about the old days, but then you talked about these up and comers, these young fighters, coming up in the league. It was kind of lightning in a bottle when you got, some of the Chuck Liddells and the Randy Couture's that were kind of, the legends from the early days, kind of carried it during that, we're growing up stage, And then all of a sudden we got, you started getting, the new age talent, the John Joneses of the world, the Francis Ngannous,
BJ Penn, people like BJ Penn.
Right. BJ Penn and
Ronda Rousey.
But you always got these fantastic, personalities and, they just did a great job of letting you in a little bit, boxers, very few of them, because they were kind of hiding behind a promoter or you watched a guy who you knew was great. Floyd Mayweather was a fantastic fighter, but you were like, man, he went into every fight he took, he knew he was going to win because it was calculated.
Everything was calculated from the size of the ring, the surface, how soft, everything. I haven't even gone into the deeper details, the glove. How hard the gloves were horsehair, synthetic, how much cushion was on the glove. Ridiculous. So, yeah, sorry. And sorry to cut you off.
But you're right. I mean, as we've talked about, part of building a league and building an organization from where they had to start, it's a masterclass of branding your athletes and your talent. And look, it got it, it, it brought a massive audience in. Because if you were just rolling out, you know, fighters, I mean, there was Bellator, there's, you know, there's other fight organizations out there, you know, that would, you know, what was it, CBS, you know, had one of the, you know, that you get Kimbo Slice, who's famous for more of his, you know, backyard brawls. Once you got that guy in a ring with some skilled fighters, you know, a little different, but you know, he was a backyard fighting legend.
Well,
but you know, UFC took everybody's punch and, you know, got better. And I mean, you know, that's the deal.
You're looking at also one of the key moves in their history was when they acquired Strikeforce, because you brought over the Cormiers, the Rockholds, the all the current world champions at that time in the UFC came from Strikeforce, and that was governed and run very well by the guy who runs Bellator right now, Scott Coker. So these moves, these power moves that were made at the time, are unbelievable, because they also, again, the promotion of the company was based on the foundation of promoting fighters, and they pretty much went hand in hand. They used the fighters to promote the company, and they used the company to promote the fighters, all through storytelling that the average American could relate to and think they could become one day. So let's look at an example. You mentioned Floyd Mayweather, right?
Mm-hmm.
Premier Boxing Champions, PBC, which was established by Floyd Mayweather's boss or manager, the one who bought him from Top Rank. And I think he was, I can't remember which year he was now. But anyway, they had a $500 million hedge fund that they pretty much spent on establishing PBC. They went out, they bought all the networks, NBC, ESPN, CBS, Fox, Fox Sports 1, Spock, and Bounce. They pretty much took up all the airtime. And then what happened is they started paying these fighters ridiculous amounts of money to steal talent from all these other places. And they did. Everyone started signing up with them. The problem was they couldn't build the organization to a level with that money to build a brand such as the UFC to continue their dominance over their sport. They ended up flopping, and they're in a ton of lawsuits where pretty much last I seen it was like a $900 million lawsuit where investors are trying to get their money back. And what I'm trying to sort of emphasize on is that money doesn't always solve the problem. It's the true master strategy and thinking by the entrepreneur that Dana White is that really pushed this, and the Fertitta brothers that really backed him and believed in his vision. And the Fertitta brothers were asked endless times, would you have hired somebody from Harvard to run this company, or would you hire Dana White? I said, Dana White, forget him. Why? Because he's street smart. He understands the world of MMA and boxing, and he comes from a boxing background. So all the rubbish that he saw in boxing, he made sure it didn't happen in the UFC. And this really emphasizes the amazing job that they did as an organization with their storytelling, in their branding, in establishing themselves as a household name around the world. And it's truly amazing when you think of it and you compare the two things. And you see the outcome of one and the outcome of the other. One's now worth $12 billion or whatever, and the other one is literally putting on fights. Great fights still, but nowhere near the capacity of the UFC. And they're both based in Vegas. So interesting comparison, interesting transition between the two codes, MMA and boxing. One's really going down south, one's really gone up north at a very, very rapid pace.
Yeah, and look, you know, boxing every once in a while gives you a fight you want to see. Hey, I wanted to see, you know, Wilder and Fury fight. and they were, you know, still, you know, relatively in their prime, right? You want, you know, but, you know, you haven't seen, you know, Joshua fight Tyson Fury. You haven't seen, you know, Alexander Usyk, who's the champion now, fight Fury. They're trying to get that fight done. You know, you saw so much, you know, shucking and jiving still in, you know, in the fight game. And the here's the challenge, you know, with boxing, WBC, WBO, IBF, you know, WHO, whatever. You know, you had four or five different, you know, letter leagues. Everybody's got their champ. Yeah. Everybody's got a different ranking. You know, hey, Dana White has the UFC. And if you're the UFC champ, you're the UFC champ. Period. End of story. You know, there was, you know, there's no unification belts. It's, you're the champ of, you know, of the 800-pound gorilla in your weight class. You had guys that would go up, you know, the only time someone held multiple belts is when, you know, a John Jones went from light heavyweight to heavyweight to win something, or another fighter went up from a welter to a bantamweight, what, you know, or down or whatever, you know, to fight to win a belt in a different weight class, you know, and you just had, you know, frankly, you just got some badass dudes, you know, and dudettes that get in that octagon, you know, with a, you know, with a mission. And, and again, from a fan standpoint, you know, we go back to that primal part of our being, you know, the gladiators getting in the ring and fight to entertain, you know, the octagon is that, you know,
it's always going to be attractive.
It's always going to be attractive because I said, you never know when the kick or the punch happens that ends it.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, it's
and it,
yeah,
speaking it's, of fighters.
Yeah.
Speaking of fighters as well, I think one point that we should touch on is how the UFC has really, really mastered fighter development. So you mentioned the show earlier, Tough. So that was one of the early stages of the UFC. They introduced the show where you have two teams, both coached by two different fighters, and they all fight off, and then the fighters will end up fighting off after
for
it as
a
well.
Contract. Yeah, for yeah, a contract. Yeah, for yeah. a contract with so, UFC.
Exactly. So that was the start. Then they introduced looking for a fight. Then they introduced Dana White's contender. And constantly, something different, garnering all this time from all over, literally traveling the world for it. Then they introduced these PIs. They opened one in Vegas, they opened one in China, they're opening another one in Mexico, they're thinking about opening one in Africa. So this is all giving back in the sport and making sure that the best talent is coming through you. And those that are fighting and training in these conditions have the best of the best in the sport. So therefore, you're going to continuously produce amazing talent. If we look at across the pond in boxing, none of that's been done. They had a contender which did well, then they killed it. Because again, there's so much segmentation that nobody gets along. Everyone's looking for their fees, how they can make money on their fees, their sanctioning fees for each belt. Nobody gives a you know what. So again, Dana White ensured there's only one league, not multiple belts, a belt of division, and the best fight the best, right? And then in the background, went and created all these initiatives, like the Ultimate Fighter, like Looking for a Fight, like Dana White's Contender Series. And I'm sure there's going to be more and more that's going to be introduced. And then the PI topped everything off, because now you come in as a fighter of the UFC, you're not paying for anything, and you're getting the best facilities in the world, literally.
Yeah, you're going to UFC gym. Yeah. You know, you saw the licensing of that brand, you know, into products, you know, that directly aligned with the sport. You've seen the evolution and creation of now the Slap League and you know,
exactly.
Again, you know, it's there's a little bit of a Midas touch going on, you know, with you know, kind of everything they're doing. And again, I go back to they've built a league on sound business, but they've also made sure that they always came back to what do the fans want.
Exactly. You know,
and I go back to, you know, being that first mover in during COVID to find a way. Dana White was going to give you your fights, whether it was in, you know, Fight Island. You know, they got down to when Florida opened up, Jacksonville was, you know, was the first place to host, you know, live events, you know, and then, you know, and then, you know, WWE kind of created their stage, but, you know, Dana White was like, we're fighting. We found a place where we could fight. We put it on TV. We follow protocols. We fight. You test, do everything, you know. But they gave
one employee.
Nope, he didn't.
Did not sack a single employee.
Like, we got a live entertainment product. We can make it happen. Let's go.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, as a fan, you're like, hey, we all needed the distraction during that time.
100%. 100%.
And Dana White delivered for his fans, delivered for his sponsors, as you said, delivered for his employees, those that worked for UFC and those that were in the fighting stables for UFC.
Yeah.
He's like, hey guys, we're not going anywhere. We're going to figure this out. You know, we are what we are. We're fighters.
Flying people from across the world, putting them in hotels just for testing, then getting clearance, then moving them to another hotel, and then moving them to their destination, making sure they're all clear, having backup fighters, Fight Island.
Yeah.
But what that did was it elevated the UFC to a whole new level. Because they were the only league that kept going and stayed out of the politics, which was one of the biggest things during that time. So
it forced the other leagues to go, you're going to get left in the dust by UFC if we don't get back on the court, on the ice, on the field, whatever.
Exactly.
You know, so NBA figured something out, went down and did the bubble.
Yeah, the hub.
You know, yeah, the bubble, yeah. You know, Major League Baseball figured out a way to get back on the field. You know, everybody else, you know, NASCAR, we're in cars. Why can't we race? You know, I mean, whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, they all figured out. And again, being television products, hey, we couldn't put fans in the stands, but we could deliver, you know, our media product. We could be on TV. We could start generating revenue.
To millions. Again.
Yeah. I mean, we're losing our gate. Playing our games, we're fulfilling media contracts. We're generating that revenue, and again, Dana White was like, "I'm in. Let's go. We're going to make it happen."
Yeah. They turned the Apex into their hub where they had no crowd, and they just fought every second weekend. And they were if not
it was
every
a TV
weekend,
studio.
Yeah,
literally
the nightly news.
Literally getting the nightly news. Hey, we got to fight. You know, we'll fight on Tuesday night. We'll put a fight on Thursday night. We'll have Friday and Saturday fights. We got fighters. We're putting them to work.
Each fighter has a three-fight contract every year. He's obligated to give them three fights.
Yep.
So, and he did. He did.
He did.
He went there and he did it. So, again, we spoke about the marketing and the PR, the amazing machine they've built over the years. You spoke about the fighter development and the resources that's gone into that. Amazing. Now, where I stopped you earlier was the brand partnerships. Because, again, a lot of success. We've banned brands being around for a long time. Reebok, huge deal, $70 million deal. That was the first of one uniform, no sponsors on the uniforms anymore. We're changing things up. We're going to start looking like a league. We're getting on Fox. I think it was a $45 million deal to start off with. Which then went to $450 million, which then it went to $1 billion basically. So ridiculous. The evolvement of that deal alone just explains how fast this sport is literally growing. Then you have the Modelo, which is they're pretty sure I'm pretty sure they're still there. You got Harley Davidson as well, which has been with the UFC since 2011. Metro PC, another one, for many years. I mean, it's absolutely killed it. So, what are these Monster brands?
Monster Energy,
and Bud Light. Like all these brands, if you look at them, what they have in common is they're very targeted at males, right? Because they're all what males use and consume, from motorbikes to alcohol to manscaped to shaving.
Phone networks,
mobile networks, so on and so on. So, again, we've seen a brand that's gone from everybody running away from them to now everybody wants to be on their mat, in their TV sets, on their uniforms. They were the first, one of the first brands to announce a huge crypto sponsor, crypto.com, multi-hundred-million-dollar deal. I mean, this is what we're talking about now. We're not talking about that small brand that started in Vegas in 2001 or two with only owning the words UFC. What about UFC Fight Pass? Right? That you sign off to Fight Pass, you're streaming. They were streaming before anyone. Like, it's ridiculous. These guys have been at the forefront of innovation, at the forefront of understanding their consumers, and one of the only brands to really build a community, which I personally reckon is unbreakable. It's so engaged, so enabled by them. One last thing I'll mention is the PR, the media networks that were created, the digital media networks that were created because of this sport. You got the MMA Hour, Ariel Helwani. You got SB Nation, which is a whole, you got Bloody Elbow, like all these names that aren't common to people, a huge media networks just built on this sport and this league. And then it started trickling down to all these different other leagues that appeared after them. So again, let's get a bit into the brands and how the brands are engaging with the UFC. That's your specialty. I'll hand it over to you.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, we talked about it before. What we saw was, a organization that was struggling to attract viewers. They would sell tickets to events, but you can't get it. You can't run a league by just selling tickets. You got to be, you got to have media partners. You got to have sponsors. You got to have licensing. You got to have, otherwise you're just your state fair kind of thing, And they evolved from this, right? They evolved from the early stages, kept some of their, big names, and built a brand. And again, you build a brand, you build a following, you build eyeballs, you build something that is, that is not repulsed by society, no one wants to go to a boxing match and see someone pull someone's eye out or, try to snap someone's arm into submission and all that kind of stuff. We're not that barbaric, and that had to come away from the sport in order for legitimate brands to, because at the end of the day, you're talking about, marketing to consumers and fam, ultimately, there's kids that watch this, right? So you had to be very mindful of the type of product you were putting out there, and then still keep its authenticity, which that's what they did. I mean, they built the fighter brands. They built people that you could you kind of follow their story, you root for them, but more importantly, you started to you built the fights that people wanted to see. Conor McGregor bringing, half of Ireland with him when he fights, selling out buildings. More importantly, selling 500 to a million pay-per-views worldwide. That's where it changed. And when you start putting those types of eyeballs and those types of numbers behind a league, behind an organization, and what are people doing at those events? They're drinking beer, they're drinking whiskey, they're taking pictures on their mobile cell phones. You know, they're driving in their big truck, so they want good tires. They, you know, they, you know, they're up all night, so they need some energy. You know, I mean, dude, you know, all of a sudden you started to see those sponsors. And when they, when, you know, when Bud Light was the, you know, the king of beers, you know, that for forever in a day, you know, it always been the bow tie in the middle of the ring in boxing, right?
Yeah.
When Anheuser-Busch said, "Hey, we need to give Bud Light their, you know, we're, you know, the bow tie is big in boxing. We weren't going to bring that over. Let's take Bud Light. Let's take that over here. And, you know, let's see how, you know, and when you kind of, you know, look, Tony Pontoro is one of the legends in the sports marketing business and, you know, brand building, you know, when Anheuser-Busch sponsored you, you've arrived as a league, as an organization, when Budweiser is a sponsor, Anheuser-Busch.
Wow.
And once you get one of those golden brands, other golden brands now go, okay, they've been anointed that they're okay. You know, because if Budweiser can go in, so can we, you know, kind of clears the path, you know, first one in, everybody, you know, now everybody else doesn't have to be first, or, you know, I don't need to be the one that blazes the trail here. And you know, once that happened, you started to see these other deals start to come together, and it hasn't stopped, right? I mean, obviously Budweiser was ultimately replaced by Modelo. You've seen Monster Energy, you know, kind of really got strongly behind this. You know, get Toyo tires. You've got you've got massive brands that now, you know, are in the octagon. You've seen, you know, video games. You've seen, we talked about some other, programming and fight shows kind of spawn from this. We've seen other leagues spawn from this. We've seen
movies,
you know, movies come out, you know, not as much movies, but movie stars. And,
yeah,
you know, it's become a phenomenon. And it's just, you know, at the end of the day, you see that they stayed true to kind of, you know, the authenticity of this sport. They didn't, there were probably times when they were looking at themselves going, what in the hell did we get ourselves into? Why did we do this? We just threw $2 million away, but they didn't, they believed in it. They built it in Vegas. Vegas is the, you know, if there's, you know, Vegas is the perfect place for this to kind of evolve, because obviously there's some betting to it. I mean, whether it was you know, your bookie or the books themselves, you know, it's a massive, massive, massively bet, you know, sport. And the gravitation of those brands that have now aligned themselves, you know, with the organization, that have grown with them, that have developed, you know, successful activation and marketing campaigns at retail, you know, that help draw, you know, again, someone, if you sponsor this and you don't move product, your sales go down. You don't sponsor anymore. Hey, I can guarantee you Modelo sales are going up. Modelo, you know, is doing a great job of, you know, using, you know, UFC fighters to kind of, you know, that fight, you know, you know, integrating them into their marketing campaigns around the, you know, the fighting spirit, you know. So you see brands, you know, using this and working well with it, and more importantly, you see them renewing, see them re-upping.
Yeah,
I mean, things are good, things are going right.
Yeah. I can give you a personal example, actually. I in my past life, I owned a I owned a boxing brand. And okay. It happens Conor McGregor wore a glove in New York, Madison Square Garden, when there was a historic fight in 2016. We had that glove. we were selling that glove. It was actually our glove, because I was a licensee of a brand in the States. And for weeks, we were selling that glove like hotcakes. We could not keep up, literally. Order after order. And that's just us in Oceania. I'm not even talking about head office. Head office was in the States. Non-stop on both ends, all over the world. The brand power is ridiculous. It's absolutely amazing, the reach that this league has. So, yeah, that's just a little story, personal story, where I've experienced with the UFC.
You know, look. Yeah, and look, you know, there's some people that said, hey, you know, it's NASCAR in the octagon, you know, kind of, you know, the power, you know, NASCAR, long known as one of the most loyal, you know, fan driven sports out there. You know, fans, you know, align with their drivers, align with the sport. And honestly, you know, there were people that were buying Tide and drinking Gatorade because they thought that's how they were going to keep Darrell Waltrip on the track, kind of thing. And I think in some way, you know, UFC brand loyalty to those, you know, to those that sponsor their sport and their fighters, ultimately, I mean, it carries over. I mean, they're like, there's probably some people out there that don't need manscaping, but they've got themselves a manscape, you know, shaver, and now they're in a beard. So maybe they got the beard, you know, I mean, but you know, you've got them. You know,
I'm one of them.
You know, you're walking into the, you know, you're walking in and you're going, you know, am I getting Coors Light or Modelo? Well, you know, it's a fight night tonight. I'm getting Modelo because that's the, you know, you tend to see that, right? You know, that's the power of that brand. You know, that's why brands, you know, or, you know, sponsors stay with this organization. You know, they're seeing success. They've seen their brand grow. They're seeing their sales and, you know, sales, you know, pipe. I mean, Conor McGregor launched a liquor, launched a whiskey on the back of UFC.
Absolutely. And sold it for like $600 million or something.
And sold it to DiGiazio for more than he ever made fighting. So, I mean, exactly. You know, those are and again, you know, we all know this, the story. The guy picked up his pension check or whatever his subsidy check, you know, but, you know, in order to get to his first UFC fight.
Wow.
I mean, he was literally living paycheck to paycheck on government subsidy.
His missus, Dee Devlin, saved him. She used to look after him because she used to work, right, apparently. Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, starts this rise and becomes, you know, the notorious and, you know, here you go. You've got it. And now, you know, now you got a guy who's his own brand.
Yeah.
His own organization. And they've created lots of those.
Before Floyd, you know, and made $100+ million, and then he created this whiskey and he sold it for $600 million.
Right, and hadn't won a fight since. You know, I mean, what, he won one or two fights since.
You know, but he won nothing. One since like one of the last five, because you know, Marvin Hagler used to say, it's very hard to get up and go for a run in the morning in the cold when you're sleeping on silk sheets.
That's right.
That's
right.
That's what happens. That's natural.
Marvin Hagler never slept in any silk sheets because he always kept that edge.
Exactly. He was a beast.
He was one of the great fighters. He was one of the great gentlemen of the game. You know, I mean, and again, I think that there are, you know, fighters, you know, that are coming through UFC. I mean, look, you've got great characters, you've got great champions, you've got just some phenomenal athletes, both on the men and the women's side. So, you know, they've done a great job of kind of promoting both and building both. And
Ronda's still making millions.
Ronda, and she's doing it over obviously in WWE now, but you know, you've got Amanda Nunes, and you've got, you know, some of these, you know, great, women's champs that are just incredible athletes.
Holly Holm was a three-time world champion, made no money, came to the UFC, set for life.
Ronda Rousey, and next you know, she's, you know, banking.
I was actually at that fight. It was actually unbelievable. It happened in Melbourne, Australia. 57,000 people were in the stadium watching that fight.
Yeah. Kicked her right on the ear. Out. Done.
Yeah.
And like then, blinking, it's over.
100%. And that's why, look, Ronda started fighting, made it, was selling million-plus pay-per-view as a female fighter. And Dana White, again, to his credit, said, I'll never have female fighters. And then Ronda came into the picture and he's seen her fight somewhere else, I think. And then he goes, you know what? I can make something of her. And he started this whole women's league and it's history. Then he had a chick from, I believe, Poland, Wanacek, I can't remember her name, Joanna, who also was a very attractive fighter, made millions. Now you got the young lady from that part of the world as well. She fought and lost recently, but broke records, multiple records. And you had Cyborg, and you had all these female fighters that came through and built brands for themselves and have actually reeled in millions of dollars because of starting and fighting, moving into movies. There's always that natural progression into featuring into movies. And then once you're in a movie, you're a well-known star and brands want you left, right, and center, and you can pretty much do anything. I mean, WWE was the next step. So that's what's happened.
Well, you know, it's a phenomenon, like I said, that we could probably do multiple shows on, but it's a master class in building from, they tore this thing down to the studs. They built it back up with authenticity. They built it obviously there's probably, there's lots of financial support in there and sleepless nights that are probably, there's a movie, right? There's a movie coming on this, obviously sure. we're reading the Nike story and Air Jordan now is coming out. You know, we're seeing these stories getting told and this is a story that'll get told. It's one that, look, UFC is not going away. No one's coming and buying it. I mean, it is the top of their
stronger
of the combatant sports. You know, wherever you go, they sell out. They fill. They filled. 50,000 seats. When they came down to Melbourne, they typically go into arenas. But look, you that's the one thing that WWE likes to do is they're super slam. Can you imagine a UFC, going into Allegiant Stadium with a fight card of title fight, title fight, title fight, title fight, title fight, and just absolutely
not enough room.
Let me flex for you. Let me flex and let show you what my super slam looks like.
Not enough room. Probably not.
But again, they could go down to Dallas. They could fill up AT&T Stadium. They could go to LA and fill up SoFi. They could create a card in a moment's notice, given the talent pool they have, the fighters they have, and put on an event that will be scripted, not choreographed. It'll just be like, and I guarantee Dana White, it'll be absolute gladiators. And Dana White will basically say, he'll knockout of a night is going to, instead of it being 25 grand, it's going to be, 150 grand. So you're going to have people that are going to be like, I'm letting it all hang out tonight, to win. To put on the best show, because again, when you've got, four times as many tickets sold as you could in an arena, in a stadium, you're still selling the pay-per-views, but you just, maxed out some of that money. Hey, put that money, basically in a bag for for the fighters.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. shared with you, one of our clients is a soccer club, you know, new soccer club, and they've got an event called the Gauntlet, you know, come and play us and beat us at our place and you walk away with 10 grand, you know, kind of thing. You know, you'll walk out with the soccer ball and the bag of cash, you know, so it's, you know, definitely one of those incentivized, you know, games, you know, events. But again, you know, USC has done a fantastic job of kind of creating that atmosphere. I know we've talked a lot about it tonight, but it's one of those, you know, great stories that sports, you know, the ultimate reality show gives you. And this is one that, you know, we've seen play out over 20 years and we've seen it, you know, evolve, grow, you know, be a change agent at a time where we needed it with, you know, during COVID and providing entertainment. And now they continue to, you know, give us great entertainment, but, you know, they're spawning new leagues. And who knows what's next, right? You know, they've,
absolutely.
You know, there's probably a new frontier that Dana White's sitting in there, you know, figuring out right now, and we'll at some point we'll know about it. But it should be fun.
Awesome. I mean, it's been a long, very long episode. I think our longest to date. lots to talk about with this amazing league. But as always, we have to wrap things up. And before we do, I'm going to hand it over to you for some parting words.
Well, you know, again, another great week. You know, we've got, you know, lots of hot stove topics that rise up in the world of sport. You know, who's going to buy the Commanders? Who's going to be our NCAA champion by the time you and I next talk? It's another fantastic week. We got KD coming back for the Suns. LeBron's back for the Lakers. You know, we got the Stars coming back. Baseball will be kicking off here pretty soon. You know, opening day is this weekend. So lots of exciting stuff. You know, I look forward to circling back and tackling another subject next week. I'm taking UConn to win the men's title. I'm taking the women from South Carolina to repeat in the women's NCAA. And, you know, those are my predictions for this week. And let's see who buys Man United and see who gets the Commanders. Those are the two big hot ticket team items on the table this week. Should be fun. Maybe we got new owners by the time you and I chat next Tuesday.
Absolutely. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here first. Thank you all for tuning in. And once again, we'll catch you all next week. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Finder podcast. Subscribe to our show for the latest episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And for more information, check out our website at sportsfinder.com.